Hello, I'm Arvin Hickman, and welcome to the PR Weekly, where PR industry news, analysis, and gossip come out to play. In this episode, we are going to discuss the launch of GB News, which has already received brand backlash, ethnic and gender pay gaps, and a spat between Ronaldo and Coca-Cola, as well as the passing of two industry luminaries. Today, I'm joined by Sarah Waddington, the MD of Astute and founder of Futureproof, also the former president of the CIPR. Now, over the weekend, Sarah was awarded a CBE for services to the PR industry. How are you going, Sarah?
Really great. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. And we're covering some fascinating subjects and talking about some amazing men. So lots to cover. And I have to say, still very shell-shocked about the weekend's news, but thrilled to bits.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll come to that in a second. Tell us a little bit about the CBE. Was it a bit of a surprise to you to receive it?
Yeah, huge surprise, actually. So I had no idea about the application, but also about the process. It's never something I've done for somebody else. I know that since I've been awarded it, other PR practitioners said to me, oh, I know all about that. I did that for so-and-so, who's my CEO or whatever. But this was completely new to me. And my lovely client and friend, Jen Robson at the North East Lep, apparently secretly approached WADS last summer and said, I think Sarah would be suitable for putting forward for an award. What do you think? And the two of them had co-conspired, had put an application, I have no idea how, and gathered supporting letters. And so, I got a letter. I didn't know anything until I got an email, actually, probably 3 weeks ago now. And it came in at 2 minutes to six on a Thursday. And suffice to say, I nearly fell off my chair.
I mean, it's absolutely amazing. And congratulations, by the way. How did it make you feel for all the hard work and years you've put into the industry?
Do you know what? I am absolutely, utterly delighted. And like I say, I am quite shell-shocked. I'm still processing. But you've got to remember that I've never worked in isolation. I've been really fortunate to be surrounded by some really great people who are great leaders in their own right, and take Futureproof. You know, WADS helped me establish that. But that it only works because of the community behind it. You know, we've got, six books now? They're all, you know, co-authored. And so I think this award stands for kind of all the work that everybody's put in. And you know what's been really lovely, as I've been kind of blown away by the messages, because I have to say I've not yet got control of my social media. I certainly haven't got control of my email, and now the post is coming, and it's quite something. But I think people have said overwhelmingly, and this is what's lovely, that they're really pleased to see a public relations leader acknowledged, and the recognition for that, and that what that means for our industry, and that they hope I will use that and the industry can use it as a platform. And so that's something I'm really trying to think about, and I think for as an industry, I'd love us to think collectively about what do we do and how do we do that, because, you know, we have such an important contribution to business, and we bring such value to organizations. I think COVID has really helped reinforce that and bring that to the fore, but we need to use that and keep that momentum going, and yeah, something to think about, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, I think I speak for a lot of people in the industry when I say that it is absolutely thoroughly deserved. So well done.
Oh, thank you. I'm still blushing, Sarah. I'm like so cringy about it, but I am utterly grateful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, unfortunately, we have to move along to some sad news over the weekend. The PR industry lost two of its brightest lights in former Burson Marsteller chair Bob Leaf and Robert Phillips, who led Edelman and his own consultancy, Jericho Chambers, for several years before dying of cancer. Now, Sarah, you knew both of the Roberts fairly well. Let's start off with Bob Leaf. What can you tell me about the man and the legacy that he left behind in PR?
I'm the legend. So, do you know, I probably knew Bob. I'm not massively close to either, and certainly knew Bob Leaf better than Robert Phillips. But Bob, what can I say about Bob? I was immensely fond of Bob, and I was really upset at the weekend when I read the news, actually. People will be aware he was dubbed the father of public relations. And if you've ever read his book, which I've got right next to me here, the signed copy he gave me, The Art of Perception, Memoirs of a Life in PR, you will absolutely know why. I mean, the stories in that, forget Mad Men, this is the real thing.
This is the real stuff.
Like, you've got everything. You know, you've got the silhouette picture on the front. You've got stories about martinis. You've You've got global travel. You've got a wonderful love story about his wife, Adele, you know, everything. And you know what? That would come through from the minute you met him. And Bob was very generous, and he sought me out when I became president of the CIPR. He contacted me, and it was the start of what I would call a really lovely and engaging relationship. And, you know, we were in contact. I feel a bit guilty because actually kind of tailed off this year, but we were in contact via email until last year. And he came to the CIPR 70th anniversary at St. Bride's at the start of my presidential year. And he was just brilliant. And from that point, we actually caught up a few times. We went for breakfast. He took Wads and I out for dinner. You know, wherever you were, he'd tout his book. Literally, I went for breakfast with him and he'd have his book with him, or he'd be handing out cards and saying, "You need to read my book." And you know what? He always got a sale. I was mortified. I would be mortified. Like, absolutely. I was like, "Bob, what are you doing?" But he was brilliant, and he was sparkling, and his New York accent was just absolutely really adorable. And he was a terrible flirt, and he just was just so much. It was just so much fun. I mean, he came to the CIP. I had a Northern Conference in Newcastle in July. I think it was July of that year, 2018, and he was the last session. And you know what? He was by far, he smashed it. Like, everybody sat there. Everybody's literally sat at the front of their seat. They were pouring over every single word. He was absolutely naughty. I had to stop him several times with his anecdotes. And it's like, "Bob, you literally can't," because I'd heard them before. I was like, "You literally can't tell this. You cannot tell this story right now." And he was just wonderful. And obviously his whole work was related to what he called perception management. And what he meant by that was how to understand how your relevant audiences saw your organization, and how you could kind of improve that perception. He was a really smart, innovative thinker, and just a really great guy.
You know, he sounds absolutely amazing, and obviously left a huge mark on the industry. And I just personally like to offer my condolences to Bob Leaf's family and friends. But what about Robert Phillips? Now, he co-founded Jackie Cooper PR, spent many years leading Edelman in the UK and EMEA before setting up his own business. What can you recall about Robert's legacy and how he was as a man?
Yeah, so again, I'm going to be very honest. I'm not the best person. I wasn't close friends with him, and I didn't work very closely with him. But the experience I had with him, again, did leave a big impression. So I met him when he was had set up Jericho Chambers, and he was another lovely person who, out of sheer generosity, contacted me at the beginning when I was trying to establish Future Proof. And I'm pretty sure that he had seen stuff in there that he believed and he had been writing about, and he was just really generous in terms of getting in touch, and he helped me connect with people that he thought would be useful and that would push my thinking. So for example, Robert introduced me to Tomorrow's Company, who then invited me to a roundtable on trust, truth and transparency in business, which is a subject really close to his heart. And I think what was really interesting about Robert is that, again, another inquiring mind, another very provocative person, but actually with the right intentions. And you know what, when he wrote Trust Me, PR is Dead, I like many, took a little bit of umbrage at the title. I was a bit like, "Oh, here we go again, I'm sick of everybody talking this industry down." But actually, when you read the book, there were many really important salient points in there, and he was well before his time. And actually, do you know what, the discomfort that he used to leave with people is something that I believe we need to embrace as an industry to learn and change. You know, I think we've seen it recently this past year with diversity and inclusion, you know, that there has been a very much discomfort with some of the finger pointing that's gone on, with some of the issues, the big endemic issues that we've had to address. But that has been really important because, and I hate to use this phrase, but we may be able to push the needle forward. There has been a step change, a shift in the industry that was much needed. And, you know, I kind of think that Bob and Robert always had this at their core. That's what they did. That's how they lived and breathed. And I just think they were great leaders, and the industry has lost two greats in this past few days.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, once again, I'd just like to offer my condolences to Robert Phillips's family and friends. Now, there are some really fantastic obituaries about the lives of Bob Leaf and Robert Phillips on the PR Week, PRCA, and Provoke website, so I would encourage you to go and check them all out. Right, so let's move along to ethnic and gender pay gaps. Now, PR Week has launched a new project with People Like Us, supported by the PRCA and Women in PR, which is to provide greater transparency of ethnic and gender pay gaps in the industry. Now, recent research from our top 150 consultancies found one in five agencies employ no non-white staff at all, and almost 80% had all white boards. Now, there's been good progress over the years. I wouldn't say it's perfect, but good progress in terms of gender pay gap reporting. But that sort of data is really lacking when it comes to ethnicity. What is your view on how much gender pay transparency has helped shift the dial when it comes to promoting gender equality in business?
Well, to be honest, I don't think it really has. I've always been quite pissed, actually, that the government only made it mandatory for organisations size 250 plus. And I've always said that actually, do you know what? If you're a business with more than two people, you should be publishing this data. You know, what's been really great, if you look to where people have done this well, the it's not often you can say this, but the big accountancy, the big four accountancy practices, actually got their head around this quite a while ago. No, they're knocking on what, 5 to 10 years that they've actually been publishing ethnicity and gender pay gap of reporting. And I just kind of think it, for me, if you don't have to be transparent, there is no real incentive to be doing it unless you are really 100% committed to the cause. And I'm afraid for both businesses, and I think it is most businesses for a whole raft of reasons, you know, it is the number one priority. So anything for me that forces businesses to think about how they are hiring, nurturing, and looking after their talent, and remunerating them critically and incentivizing them is got to be hugely welcomed.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those things, isn't it, where businesses can talk all the talk they want to, but if they're not actually taking actions and walking the walk,
It's
then
bullshit.
it's kind of meaningless, isn't it? It is just PR essentially. Now, there is a lack of transparency though, isn't there? Like, there's a lot of people in the industry who probably want to talk a good game about diversity and what they're doing, all these programs they're planning to implement, but there's very little in terms of evidence of what's actually being achieved.
And you look at the industry reports, so this CIPR, State of the Profession, and the PR Census by the PRCA, and we're just not shifting. It's not good. You know, like it might be we have an increase in the number of black and ethnic minority practitioners, but they tend to be in junior roles, and that is not good enough. It's just not good enough. And you know what? Change isn't easy. I appreciate it takes time. I appreciate you have to get the management buy-in, and I appreciate it's probably going to be fairly costly in the first instance. But you know what? That there isn't an excuse these days for not doing it. As you know, I sit on the board of the Blueprint, which is Elizabeth Bananuka's incredible initiative. And you know what? It is hard to get that blueprint. If you look at the process, it is difficult. My organisation hasn't got it yet because you know what? We're only halfway through working through what is necessary in order to get that. And I think, but at least it gives you the steps to do that. I think part of the issue as well, to be fair to entrepreneurs like me, it can sometimes feel quite overwhelming in terms of knowing where to start. But again, if you are forced to report in terms of your ethnic and gender pay gap, it's a great start because you've nowhere to go after that. And to be honest, kudos to the people who've done that upfront without having had to, because you know that they're the ones who actually give a shit about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Blueprint is an absolutely fantastic program. So I would encourage all agencies to get involved with that as well. But very much encourage agencies and in-house teams to take part in this new project that PR Week is leading to provide greater transparency over pay gap reporting. Now, the big media story of the past week has been the launch of GB News on Sunday.
Welcome to the launch of GB News, Britain's news channel, dedicated to covering the news that matters to you and to giving a voice to those who felt sidelined or even silenced in our great national debates. Because if it matters to you, it matters to us. GB News will not slavishly follow the existing news agenda. We're not a rolling news channel, nor will we be providing conventional news bulletins.
Look, it's only been a few days, but there's already been a backlash from some brands. You know, the likes of Grolsch, the beer brand, Nivea, Copenberg Cider, they've already said they're going to boycott the channel. And some other brands have said that they'll review whether they want their ads placed on the channel and that they were not aware the ads had been running on it. Firstly, Sarah, I'm really keen to get your impressions of GB News. Have you had a chance to check it out? What do you think of it?
I've had a small look, and I know this is not going to surprise you, Robin, but it's not massively my bag. But obviously, you have to have a nosy. And I have got a watching brief on this. I think too early to call how this is going to go. But interesting start. Watching people's perspectives, like particularly people like Jim Waterson, who's the media editor of The Guardian, and just seeing general pieces come through in the mainstream. Obviously, they've all got they're all biased for their own reasons. It's difficult to have that objectivity, but it's fascinating. And I think what is most interesting to me is that where they're going to go with it. They don't have rolling news on the hour. They are going to take topics, and they have different presenters every hour, so they can talk about things in more depth. I want to know, how are they going to fill this time? They've got an older demographic in terms of viewers. You know, young people don't watch the TV. I do laugh at the fact that Downing Street allegedly called it Gammon Britain News because of that demographic. I'm interested. Where will it go? How will it fill the time? They're not like, if there's a breaking incident, they're not going to have news crews going to it. I think they could find that tough. But equally, I think where they may win is where, you know, if they get somebody who's quite controversial, something has happened, they may not have the viewers tuned in then at that point, but they can package it up for social and it will go viral. And yeah, that's, you know, that's quite powerful, because where attention is, that's where the money comes, isn't it?
I read that their business model isn't so much actually being ad funded. Where the sort of business model they want to go down, and I think they're going to roll this out eventually.
Subscription
model. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, like a standard Fox News type model.
So people keep talking about Fox. You know, people are saying Fox is the closest competitor, but I don't think you can bring that comparison, because obviously Fox is subscription, but there is no one governing US media like we have Ofcom. Yeah. So probably Talk News, LBC across here. I'm also interested in the fact that they have apparently invested in regional presence, which actually is lacking elsewhere. You know, the BBC have come under fire for that. You know, the Nationals don't necessarily have huge number of correspondents up. I'm up north, so I'm in Newcastle, but up here, and sometimes we can feel a little bit left out. So maybe that will work for them. But you know, they say what I heard was that the TV element is the least. That yes, it's important, they want to launch it, they want it to be successful, but ultimately this subscription model for fans is where viewers can engage with hosts is where the long-term thinking and plan is at.
Yeah, I have to also say that I'm a little bit surprised in terms of the way they're positioning this. Firstly, it's not a news channel. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah, it's not.
Secondly, they want to champion sort of, you know, the unheard voices in the regions. Why are they based in Paddington, if that is the case? Why not be based in Newcastle or Leeds or somewhere else that's sort of at the heart of the regions
because Andrew Neil. Andrew Neil has to fly in from the south of France, so that's why.
I understand that he's obviously a figurehead, but he's got one show. There are lots of other presenters there. It just seems a little bit strange. Now, in terms of its ongoing success, what do you think it really needs to do to get cut through? You know, obviously, there's a lot of hype around it. It's its first week. But as we look, you know, 3 to 6 months down the track, what do you think it really needs to do to attract some of these regional audiences that you're very familiar with?
Yeah, I think this is the million-dollar question. I have been racking my brains about it. As I've said, you know, they've already got a smaller demographic in terms of that older audience of people who don't feel they're being served, which is quite fascinating to me as well. Anyway, I listened to I mentioned Jim before. Jim Waterston, thank you very much, from The Guardian, on their podcast about this, and he just said, you know, how many, it's really interesting because once you've done, let's pull down all the statues, and you've done that story, and all the kind of woke and woke stories that they absolutely hate, you know, where do you go? Like, literally, what is left? Because if you've covered them all, you're really struggling to find new content. And that's really where I'm kind of like, what is it you're thinking, and what are the stories from the regions that you're going to get? Mm. I know that Rachel Sweeney, who's the Northeast correspondent, has been working really hard out and about, and her social is full of, you know, getting things ready and rehearsals and how the studio is now complete and, you know, people that she's been meeting. But it doesn't look that different to what you see elsewhere. And I wonder whether the hype has been just to get it launched and it will just settle down and become fairly mainstream. I mean, the thing that bothers me really is that, you know, this whole premise is that they're going to fight the woke culture war. And I just think it's a absolute disgrace, and I hate the word spin, but it's just bullshit. The people behind this are very wealthy, elite people. So we're still being controlled by a small minority of mainly white people with their own agenda. You know, got people who have sat in the House of Lords who are behind this. You've got Andrew Neil, who's, you know, to all intents and purposes, known as a conservative or at least right-wing thinker. You know, it's one to watch, and it's difficult to call, but let's just see if they can maintain the audiences in the next couple of weeks. But as you've seen, you know, it's really hard for brands to know where their ads are being served, and the reaction is really quite interesting already. Like you say, Copperberg and many others are pulling out, or others also holding a watching brief and then deciding what to do from there.
Do you think this is just a reaction by some brands that have clearly positioned themselves as having a certain ethical compass? Do you see more brands following suit? And the other question I wanted to ask you as well is, where do you sort of see, you're wearing your sort of comms hat, where do you see the PR opportunities for brands to sort of engage with GB News?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think it makes absolute sense. There are certain brands who, and I hate the word woke and whatever that's supposed to stand for. Most people will know that I'm pretty liberal left, and I will, you know, if people haven't got a voice, I'll be there, hopefully, you know, doing the right thing and speaking on their behalf. So I think if you're a brand that sets your stall with those kind of values, it's really important that you know, you make sure that you're not advertising on a channel or actually they're perhaps working against minorities, which, you know, let's face it, can often happen here. So it will be really interesting to see what happens, and I think it will be very dependent on the tone and the content and you know, how they respond to the reaction that they've had to date. And for brands, I just think, you know, the opportunity is just very much to be true to your values. If you are ballsy and brash and you are actually quite irreverent, maybe that's the place for you. And, you know, there is a home for everyone, and that's your audience. If your audience is, as Downing Street said, and I'm using inverted commas, gammon, if you're looking to target gammon, maybe this is the perfect media partner.
maybe it is. Well, I'll have to say, I've seen it a few times. I've seen some very, very interesting topics being discussed. I think there was one that I saw this morning. It was a video actually on social media where they were asking about whether Prince Andrew's pedophilia was more controversial than Harry and Meghan, and whether that was right. And they had some lady on there who tried to explain the different types of pedophilia, and I just thought, wow, this is...
I mean, this is what I mean there. We are scraping the bottom of the barrel. If you're having to compare pedophilia with two royals who have... Are they still royals? I'm not sure they are, but two royals who have had a baby, a second baby. I'm like, really? There is no comparison. If you are racist and you've got a problem with that, this is what I mean. If you're a brand and you're watching that play out, and clearly the issues with Meghan, I do believe, are to do with racism, you're going to want to get out of there. I mean, it's just not, it's not an environment I'm comfortable in. I don't know, I want to watch on my TV.
Well, I'm sure it'll certainly be one to watch anyway, just to sort of see how GB News settles down, see how it evolves, and see if it can overcome some of those quite glaring technical glitches that it seems to encounter every now and again. Speaking of royalty, in our final segment of this episode, we are going to discuss Portugal forward Cristiano Ronaldo and his public spat with Coca-Cola at the Euro 2020 press conference.
And in sport, Cristiano Ronaldo already having a huge impact on the Euro 2020 championships. This was the moment. The Portuguese superstar decided he didn't want to promote the tournament sponsor Coca-Cola during a press conference.
Now, Ronaldo replaced a bottle of Coke positioned in front of him with a bottle of water and encouraged his fans to drink water instead. Now, Coke has responded by saying everybody is entitled to their drink preferences with different tastes and needs. Just today, French star Paul Pogba removed a bottle of Heineken from his own press conference setting. Sarah, what is your take on this and the idea of sports athletes as influencers, as well as unhealthy products promoting elite sport?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this. And I was quite surprised because I need to research this. I'm pretty sure that was not Cristiano Ronaldo aligned with Coca-Cola at some point in the past. I'm sure that I have seen something with him and, you know, promoting Coke and KFC.
Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I mean, he's done so many different deals in the past. And, you know, obviously, it's great that he's promoting a healthy message. I mean, there is nothing wrong with drinking more water. That's what every doctor in the land would advocate. But interesting that he's done that. And, you know, it's I would love to know more about the motives behind that. I would hope it wouldn't be just commercial in terms of that he hasn't got a personal deal anymore. I mean, obviously, you can understand Pogba an awful lot more, but surely that comes as part of the territory. And I think in terms of sports people as influencers, we know they are. That's why they get these high-profile sponsorship deals. It's why, you know, there was this big hoo-ha about fantastic tennis player who recently had to step down from the French Open, you know.
Naomi Osaka.
Yeah, absolutely. And I felt that was really badly handled on for her, by the way. You know, if you have mental health issues, you have to handle that a lot more sensitively than she got. But you know, they are, you know, they're big stars. They're incredible at what they do. People aspire to them, so of course their behavior, people want to copy it. They want to wear what they're wearing. They want to drink what they're drinking. But I'm absolutely fascinated by it. I think it's a short-term blip for Coke, to be honest. But you know, obviously very hard to manage, and I wouldn't have wanted to be the comms team in the meantime.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it sounds like a bit of a crisis for those particular brands. Do you think, though, when you sort of sponsor a major event like this, I mean, Coca-Cola has so many different ranges of drinks, including healthier options. Do you think Coke probably should have ensured, knowing that Ronaldo's a bit of a health freak, he has said things about soft drinks in the past before, do you think they should have been a little bit more careful to ensure that, you know, it was a water or a zero sugar option that was placed in front of him?
Do you know, I'd be really surprised if some kind of conversation hadn't taken place. You know, good comms people would have had all that covered. It's very difficult. I mean, from one Coke can to another these days, it's quite difficult. You know, Coke Zero is the one I like best, but it looks very much like a Coke can. I don't think it's to do with whichever one was in front of him. I think it was probably just a pointed, you know, I was going to say attack. It wasn't an attack, but it was a, you know, a pointed move against the company. It was the fact that it was Coca-Cola and rather than the type of drink it was, to my mind.
Fair enough. Well, you know, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time, Sarah, but thank you so much for joining the PR Weekly. And thank you to our listeners. If you'd like to find out any more about the major stories this week, please visit our website, prweek.com/UK. Also, a big thanks to our producer, Lindsay Riley from Rethink Audio, for putting this episode together. Now, next week, we'll be taking a break, so please join us in a fortnight. Until next time, goodbye.